Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department's Chief Information Officer. Sylvia, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jason. It's good to see you again.
So I know it's been a while since I've had the Interior Department CIO on my program, so there's a ton to catch up on, plus a lot of new priorities. So I'm going to start with the old priorities for this conversation. And one of the things that Interior did several years ago, I think almost 6 years ago, if you can believe it, was there was a memo issued by Secretary Salazar at the time, who really gave the CIO broader, more responsibilities. This was well before the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, and now with FITAR in place. Just give me a sense of how that change, that culture change, that change in IT oversight has been going over the last 6 years, and where are you guys at now?
I think you're talking about our Secretary's Order 3309, as we called it, which launched our IT transformation in 2011. And what that did was it actually created one CIO for the whole department. It created kind of more of a structure where the bureaus were supposed to be subordinate to the CIO, and it was driving a lot of enterprise-wide IT solutions for the whole department instead of every bureau doing their own thing. And I would say that we did a lot of things under IT transformation. Some of them, like, we got to one email system, right? And we more aggressively moved to cloud and did a whole bunch of other things. I think, though, since FITARA has come out, you've got the difference between an agency deciding to do something on its own volition, right, versus being legally bound to do it. So I think FITARA actually takes what we're doing with IT transformation and actually codified it in law, right? And it made it that this isn't a choice anymore. You've got to do this. And so what I'm actually excited to talk to you about today is telling you more about what we're doing in the department to implement FITARA.
So let's talk about FITARA because I think it's a natural segue. One of the big changes when a place like Interior, and I've talked to several CIOs over the years that have sat in your chair, and it was always very challenging because of the decentralized nature, plus a lot of the bureaus, and I know you worked in the bureau at one point, so you understand this, they felt like, well, I'm on kind of my own island, why is headquarters trying to come into my island? And so give me a sense, how much change has that culture changed? Do you feel like the culture change has really happened?
Well, so I tell you that the very perilous world that we sit in today with cybersecurity and all that you see in the news, all the things that are happening, whether in the government or in the private sector, that kind of going on alongside of FITARA, it kind of, in a way, it's like it's just like the perfect pairing, because FITARA is a law that tells you thou shalt, and this, all the things that are happening in cybersecurity is that, oh, wait a second, not only thou shalt, we really have to do this. Because we as an agency, our reputation's at stake, right? I do feel like we've made a significant shift in terms of moving from the thou shalt to the, yes, we really want to do it because this is going to be better for us all. In the department's FITARA plan, two big things that are changes that we made compared to where we were with IT transformation and anything before that was, one thing is we required the bureaus to centralize authority and accountability into these new positions that we're calling associate CIOs. So each bureau has an associate CIO. And that associate CIO is supposed to be responsible for everything that is what we call information management and technology. So it's not just IT. It's also information management, because you care about the data, right? What are the hackers after? They're after the data. So information management and technology is a new term that we've coined here. So we're vesting all authority for IMT and the bureaus under the one positions. And the second big change that we made, and this was required by FITARA and by OMB's common baseline, was that all of the ACIOs, I am in their supervisory chain. I am now like their second line supervisor. Before, that linkage in terms of the reporting relationship didn't exist. And I think it made how things work much weaker, because I think that the department CIO could have like said, hey, we really need to do this. But because there wasn't really kind of this direct line, bureaus could opt to listen to it or not, right? Now you have a direct link, and this, it's a cascading a chain of accountability, if you will, with me at the top of that and then cascading to the bureaus in their own organizations and in programs and et cetera and so forth. So I think those are major changes that are having, well, I think they will have major impact, but in a positive way, I'm hoping.
So you've been through the 2017 budget development piece earlier this summer. That's probably the first time where you as the CIO of the Interior Department could sit down with the other CIOs and other program offices and really say, where are we spending the IT money? Is that part of this change when you talk about the real cascading chain of accountability? Did that come through there as well?
Yes. Yeah, so in our FITARA plan, and this again is guided by OMB's common baseline, there are a few aspects that we focused on. One is governance. One is portfolio management, IT portfolio management. Another is budget formulation, IT budget formulation and execution. And then you have IT acquisitions, and you also have human resources, like the whole, you know, workforce issue. So those five or six dimensions are what, for us, creates a comprehensive approach for our FITARA implementation in the Department of the Interior.
Do you get a sense, knowing that you spent a big part of your career, if not your whole career, in Interior, that things are different, that things are better from an IT standpoint? And not just because you're the CIO, but you know, when you hear from your colleagues in the bureau level and you see what's happening at the bureau level, do you find that, oh, that would never have happened 5, 7, 10 years ago?
Yes. I think the big thing that has changed is, in a good part of my history at the Department of the Interior, I joined here in 2006, so I can't believe it. It's been 10 years already. I spent my first 3 years in a bureau and then was in a number of positions. I've been in this position for just over 2 years now. Prior to being in this position, I would say that there's been a history of an adversarial relationship between the department and the bureaus. It's sort of like the us against them, where the department's like always coming down with the hammer and, you know, what you've done wrong and all that kind of stuff. And honestly, it's kind of like, for me, in my management style, that's not how I feel like we will get stuff done best. I feel like we have to come at this as a whole team. So I'm not looking to create divisions between us. I'm actually looking to create common ground, because I really think that together we can solve the hard problems at Interior. But the minute we start to become divisive, you actually slow down progress. And in fact, you know, we've experienced situations where, because the fighting is so bad, right? The dissension's so bad that you're really making no progress on the issue. So I feel like that culture has changed. And so therefore, there's a whole lot more openness and transparency and the willingness to work together in dialogue, because we're not playing a blame game. You know, it's not I'm sitting in this chair as a CIO looking to get you if you're in a bureau. Because if I get you, I've got me, you know, because we're really all one organization. So I feel like the tone and tenor has changed. And as a result, we're starting to be able to come together and actually talk about department-wide solutions to hard problems. And looking, for example, something that we continuously talk about and want to talk about more and actually do something about more is figure out how we do shared services inside the Department of the Interior better than we have in the past. And in that model, the department, we are already a shared service provider to the bureaus, right? We deliver the network, we deliver email, et cetera, and so forth. The bureaus can also play in this space of being shared service providers inside the department. The department doesn't have to be the sole shared service provider. So we're trying to find ways to make that a reality.
It's interesting. You brought up shared services, and as you were kind of going through the changes that have happened over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years regarding, again, first the secretary's memo and then later the FITARA, shared services was, okay, if you're all in it together, then how are you sharing? So let's talk about that a little bit more. You said you provide email, network. What other shared services are currently being provided by the headquarters, and what other shared services are out there that potentially could be provided by the bureaus, where you can kind of look at the commodity IT piece that OMB is pushing for as well and say, okay, how can we do this better, faster, cheaper?
I don't want to be too specific about things where the bureaus could potentially be shared service providers, because there's some active things that we're trying to work out now. But in terms of the department, we have a cloud program. So in some ways, we've used contracts, like department-wide contracts, to be kind of more of a way to drive more of a centralized way of you know, doing something, or what tools you're using, instead of every bureau, you know, buying things kind of independently. So we have this foundational cloud hosting contract that we led a few years ago. So we have a cloud-based email journaling solution that goes with our email solution, which we call Bison Connect. So those are just a number of things. We're talking with bureaus about potentially other things. Well, so we have Drupal, our web content management system. That's another thing that's a shared service. But in terms of some of the things where bureaus can be shared service providers more broadly, we are seriously looking at a few things right now, but they haven't come to fruition yet. So maybe next time we'll talk about it and I can give you more.
Well, I know also just there's the Interior Business Center, which already provides shared services for government-wide, plus I know for Interior themselves. So I know that's another area. When you look at the shared services, is that something that, again, is a sign of the change? Could you have done shared services in 2006 or 2007 when you first started? Would the bureaus would have accepted one email system, or would the bureaus would have accepted one mobile device management system?
I don't think so. In a way, when Secretary Salazar came in 2009, he was the one who wanted one email system. He had a hard time sending an email to all employees in the Department of the Interior. So, you know, he was like, hey, this doesn't make sense to me. I want one email system. So we got it for him. Even with the secretary saying he wanted it, I won't tell you that it was easy. It was still difficult, but we got it. And I think the top level kind of pushing down and saying, I want this, made a difference. I think that in more of the collaborative environment that we're building with the bureaus, I think the whole thing of we want the next thing and we want to have one way of doing it, not 14 ways of doing it, I think that those conversations are starting to happen more naturally now.
And obviously that's a good sign, so obviously it would be great to follow up with you once you have a little more details. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, you mentioned cloud a couple times. We can jump in and talk more about cloud. My guest is Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department's Chief Information Officer. Now, Sylvia, before break, we're doing a lot about FITARA, shared services. This thing called cloud came up once in a while. I can't talk to a CIO without cloud coming up. You guys were probably on the leading edge, if not the cutting edge, when it came to cloud. Email is one example of the cloud contract. So let's talk about where you are today and where you're heading in the future with cloud.
Cloud isn't just a integral part of our strategy. And I would really associate what we're doing with cloud and even data center consolidation with cybersecurity, because it's all about reducing our threat surface. And cloud is a really good way for us to get there while we get other benefits from it. So cloud is definitely something part of our long-term future.
The one thing about cloud with long-term is there's savings, and then there's the ability to scale quickly and all the pieces and parts, and sometimes there's no savings, but you get more services. Because you were one of the first ones to the cloud, do you get a sense that email's cheaper, or if it's not cheaper, if it's the same price, but you're getting double the storage or double the number of seats or whatever, double the capacity?
I think one of the challenges that Interior has, and I would be surprised if this wasn't true for other agencies, is that understanding what our true total cost is for a particular IT service is very difficult to get your arms around, because traditionally they haven't been managed centrally. They've been managed by multiple organizations who have different notions about what their costs are. Some of them don't count some of their sunk costs, right? They think, oh, well, yeah, that guy's always there, so I don't have to count the cost of his labor. But the truth is that if you really want to do an apples to apples, you have to look at total cost of ownership. So I believe that our mail cloud-based email solution is cost-effective. I can't tell you how much we're saving from it because of that dynamic where I think there was a poor baseline to start. But now I can say, I know how much we spend on email and collaboration. And do I think we get more from it? Absolutely. At one point in time, before we went on to Google Apps for Government, there were in some cases in the bureaus where it was internally hosted email, very low storage thresholds. So there would be constantly the issue of, oh my gosh, you know, ran out of storage, that email didn't go through. And then it's like, what do you do? It's just kind of this, I know it sounds crazy that people would have to deal with that, but yeah, you'd have to clean out your email box to get more storage, right? That isn't the issue anymore with us using Google Apps for Government. In addition, I think like some of the collaboration tools that are in Google Apps for Government have helped us so much, because it's this, like we use a lot Google Docs and you know, Google Drive and Sites and all that kind of stuff. And the way you collaborate on a document is so seamless that in some cases, it's actually helped us to redesign work processes. I know some of our different offices actually completely designed their work process around the fact that they can now collaboratively go on at the same time, simultaneously modify documents. It just has been a huge, to me, game changer in terms of how people work. There's still people who I think haven't necessarily, it could be the older generation here, not totally embracing the Google environment, still like our Microsoft environment, which we have too. But I would tell you that many, many people have thoroughly embraced the Google environment, and just even me, I can't even think of how I'd work without that, right? So in terms of cost benefit, bottom line is I truly believe that there are savings or other kinds of advantages that we got by going to the cloud and getting these more modern tools. Maybe we're not outstanding at quantifying them, but I think that they're felt.
It's interesting you talk about modifying workflow processes. That's such a key. I mean, whenever you talk about technology, it's, you know, you got to be careful not to lift and shift is what we hear, right? And just because you have a new technology, you can't change the technology to meet your workflow. You got to change your workflow to meet the technology sometimes, and sometimes it's a little bit of both. Do you get a sense that that change in workflow, that change in work processes is also adding to part of that benefit of the cloud, meaning it's, again, better, faster, cheaper?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to sustain an internal infrastructure for this, right? And think about how that would have been in the past. We'd have to get servers and get all the right software on it, get people to maintain all that stuff, secure it in our data center, and whether or not it would have worked, you know, just because I don't think the federal government necessarily is on the cutting edge of being up in all of our skills and technology. In some cases, you know, frankly, I think the private sector does better, so why wouldn't we consume it? It is better, faster, cheaper, so we should consume it. And we are, and we're reaping the benefits. So I think just the whole burden of that, right, it shifts that I don't have to worry about that part. In the case of our email solution, it's a software as a service solution. So I have things that we have to worry about still, right? More about authentication and kind of like phishing and things like that. But I don't have to worry about whether email's up in the data center. You know, that's seamless.
And it's someone else's problem. Google's problem in this sense. You also talked about cloud going forward a little bit. Talk a little bit about future plans or newer capabilities in the cloud. And is it hybrid? Is it public? Is it private? Is it a little bit of here and a little bit of there?
It depends on what it is. If it's anything that is publicly accessible, we can do openly, kind of in a public cloud environment. Most of our stuff, though, in terms of the internal work we have, we would have to have that in a private cloud, maybe even private government community cloud. There's a lot, though, in terms of what Interior's business is, clearly because we work with the public, right, where there's opportunity to use the public cloud. But I think that it's hybrid, right? And I also think there are some instances where we'll still want to keep certain things in-house for whatever reason. I just think that, so it's kind of a mix of cloud with in-house, public, private, that kind of thing. I think we need as many options as possible to meet our diverse needs. So where we're going in the future, well, something that we started to work on, I would say over the past 2 years, is we've been trying to help the wildland fire community, which is, it's really fascinating because if you think about wildland fire, you hear about it in the news all the time. From a fighting wildland fire perspective, it's an interagency deal, right? It's federal, state, local, tribal. It's sometimes international, you know, if you're at the borders, or you bring in like Canadian government, Australian government, whatever, to come and fight fires here. And if you think about it from an IT perspective, I go out every year to Boise in August to go check out what's going on in wildland fire, and was kind of like dismayed to see that you've got a situation on the ground where you've got these organizational affiliations, but the way they fight wildland fire, they drop that. The minute they hit a scene, an incident, it doesn't matter if you're a Fed or if you're a local guy. You're all supposed to be there as one team working on the fire. And they have IT systems that support that. Well, so IT doesn't work as good because IT wants to recognize you as you belong to the Department of the Interior or you're part of the state of California or whatever. So we came up with, the wildland fire group a few years ago started pilot with this thing that they called FireNet that used Google Apps for Government in the cloud. And it was a thing about creating a collaborative space for them to work seamlessly across different organizations. And so they brought us in, and because they were looking at how do we collaborate across these organizational lines, and they were just stumped, right? So we came in over the past 2 years and went out and visited them and talked with a lot of people and actually came up with this thing that we're doing now, which is we're going to be releasing it in larger chunks of a pilot. So we're hoping to get hundreds, if not thousands, online from the Wildland Fire community within the next few years. And it's actually a collaborative workspace for them to do their planning, the information sharing that they need to do with Wildland Fire. So that's an example of something where we're using the cloud for the mission. Other things that were, you know, that are potential for cloud that I think that everything that we have in terms of we need to modernize something, we kind of do follow OMB's cloud first approach, which is when we look at it, we're like, well, is it viable for the cloud, right? And then we look at our contracts and what, you know, if there would be a fit. We often do RFIs and go out and see what industry thinks. But whether you're talking about like learning management or case management, service management, forms, all these things are things that where we still have older solutions. And the possibility of us modernizing those tools as we go forward and looking at the cloud is there.
I think the Wildland Fire community example is a great one. It's mission, it's simple in many ways. Well, we had a problem, we solved it very easily. And it's not something where we have to ship, you know, 30 servers and get people new cards to log on and really solve a problem through technology that really matters. One of the things about cloud is there's the big push for security, there's a big push for FedRAMP. But there seems to be some other growing challenges. We know that the Office of Management Budget is putting out some cloud, I'll use the term loosely, guidance, and maybe more just like best practices. It could be a playbook. We're not really quite sure what they call it yet. What obstacles have you guys seen being an early adopter of cloud, and how have you overcome them?
The biggest thing, honestly, it does come down to cybersecurity and really kind of the federal IT regulations and policies that we're subject to. I think people don't inherently understand FISMA and NIST, and whether you're talking about an on-premise solution or something in the cloud, those requirements still apply. So they may be that we have to impose them on our cloud service provider, right, in the contract, but they don't go away just because you're using the cloud. And I think that was a big learning point for us at Interior, is that I think there's a certain degree of lack of knowledge generically, even when you're talking about your on-premise solution. I think the people who own those solutions don't necessarily understand all it takes for us to deliver that solution. But then when you wanted to move it over to the cloud, well, all of a sudden those same requirements apply, right? And including privacy and records and all that kind of stuff, right? So you can't just move things over to the cloud. You've got to think carefully about each one of these things to make sure you can meet the requirements, because otherwise you potentially put the data at risk and yourself and your vendor at risk, right? It's important that all that gets thought through.
One of the problems when it comes to the obstacles is people look at it as, well, can we move that application? Can we move that, you know, service to the cloud? And I think that's probably the easier of the challenges. It is the stuff you talked about, the privacy, the thinking about the long term. Is that where you guys have used, for instance, the Interior CIO Council, or have you guys developed a different way to ensure all those pieces and parts are thought of before you say, yes, let's move this application to the cloud?
Our cloud program includes kind of internal consulting services, if you will, that help guide whoever the customer is through the process. It is labor intense. It's tedious. People shouldn't have unrealistic notions about that, oh yeah, I can move to the cloud quickly. If you haven't done whatever you're doing and you want to start fresh, yes, it's fast and it's easy. But if you're trying to migrate something you're already doing and do it in the cloud, that's not as easy, right? If you've already got data, you already got an infrastructure, you're trying to move over to the cloud, you have to port that over with all the ensuring that everything that you're doing in the cloud can also meet your requirements, security and privacy, records, all that stuff. So not so easy. It takes longer as a result. And I think you ultimately get the payback for it by once you're there, but up front, you have to do it.
Fascinating, because this leads us into our next topic, which is around really modernization. But first, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk about Interior Department's efforts to modernize their IT. My guest is Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Sylvia, before break, we got into a bunch of older priorities, cloud, shared services, CIO authorities. One other one I want to touch upon is related, and you seem to be kind of setting me up really well, so I thank you for that. Shadow IT, but in that idea of shadow IT also is the idea of moving budget out of operations and maintenance and into what they call DME, Development Modernization Enhancement. So let's start with the shadow IT piece. How has all these efforts you've been doing, whether it's data center consolidation or cloud or shared services, helped you kind of tackle that, I think, issue that more and more CIOs are talking about of shadow IT?
My perspective on shadow IT may be a little different from how other CIOs may view it. In some ways, I think you see shadow IT because people in the missions who are maybe way far out there in some remote location, they're trying to get their job done, and maybe IT isn't there to find them a workable solution. So in a way, you see the greatest innovation out there in the hinterlands where they're just trying to figure out how to do their jobs. The example that I gave about FireNet, I did mention to you that it was people in the fire community, a small group, that started that. The issue was they couldn't take it anywhere, right? Because they need the bigger organization to help them scale it, right? So I think shadow IT, in some ways, I sympathize, because I think in a lot of cases, it's about people who are from the mission trying to get their jobs done as best they can. The concern, clearly, about shadow IT is that people are doing things and they don't know if things already exist and why should you be doing that? Or they may be doing things insecurely, and that's something that we really worry about. So the work that we're doing with DHS on continuous diagnostics and mitigation and our implementation of the various capabilities through that, I think ultimately is not quite, all the IT is going to come out of the shadows with that, because we're going to see everything that's on the network. But I think that we shouldn't use it necessarily. I think we need to know, so I don't want to be unclear that I think it's important for any CIO to know what is in the environment. We do need to know. And if something is not secure, I think we need to, you know, put a fence around that and so that it doesn't harm itself or others. But I do think where we find shadow IT, it's a place where we need to have a conversation. Like, you know, obviously something, they weren't getting something that they needed. So I do think if IT wants to be embraced by the mission, we can't be the enemy of the mission. You know, we need to sit down with them and actually understand, what are you trying to do with this thing? Actually, how can we help you? And then find a secure way for them to do what they're trying to do.
Going back to the Wireland Fires example, they at least were using your Google Apps for Government. They were using the approved technology versus going out and buying their own setup, or using Microsoft, and just to pick on Microsoft for a second, or buying another, some kind of SharePoint sharing ability to share data. And then if you would have discovered that, you've gone, whoa, what are you guys doing to me? So I think the difference is not that people can't go out, but they have to do it based on standards. And when they're not, that's where I think you're right, saying what aren't they getting from IT, which kind of leads us down the path of customer service as well. Is that something that you guys have been concentrating on within the CIO's office?
Definitely. That's kind of from our operations perspective. Customer service is everything. I mean, it's like I'm saying, IT, yes, we have a role with compliance and ensuring that we're following federal policies and laws and all that stuff. And it's our job to also serve the mission and find tools to help them be able to be more productive. So I think the thing about, whether you're talking about shadow IT or things like that, is that the mainstream IT organization, for me, should be there to help them figure out how to get the secure, compliant solution. Because there it is, and you can have innovation with that. Just because you comply with the law doesn't mean that you have to forsake innovation. You just have to be more careful. The frustrating thing about it all is though, yeah, it takes more time to do that. But when you're done, you have something that you know that you don't have to worry about. You know you're following the law. You know that there are controls in place to make sure that you're not going to jeopardize what you're doing, inadvertently. So I think there's peace of mind that comes with it, even though it takes longer.
Related to that, I think, is around the discussion around O&M versus DME. How is Interior doing in terms of shifting costs from legacy to newer systems?
We're doing better. I would say that just in our portfolio, we had been struggling, I want to say in more of like the early, ultimately it happened, like a big amount of our DME was around our financial system because we had a lot of modernization around our system called FBMS. It was accounting for a lot of the DME in our portfolio. So once that went to O&M, it took that DME out, and then we had to rebalance the portfolio. So I think at one point in time, we had a Fed stat with OMB, and they were pointing out that our DME was very low. It may have been like less than 6%, and that was at the time where FBMS had moved over to O&M. So over recent years, we've moved that back up over 10%. So I think in 2017, our DME was about 15% and our O&M was 85%. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I think that's spectacular because I don't. I think actually, at least based on research that I've read from Gartner and stuff like that, maybe the threshold we should be looking at for DME should be maybe in the 30% range with 70% being O&M. We're not there yet. So I think we still have work to do there.
And a lot of this effort that we've talked about earlier today, in the conversation, shared services, moving to cloud, even this idea of shadow IT, all relates back to moving the needle the other way.
We have lots of aging systems here. And so I think there's a ton of opportunity as you're looking at cloud and all these other innovative things out in the marketplace for us to be looking at how do you take some of our really kind of like decades old systems and bring them into the modern age, and that will also pump the DME up.
Sylvia, we've spent a lot of time talking old priorities. You've mixed in some new ones, but let's jump into some new priorities. From your perspective, what are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
So cybersecurity is hugely on my radar. I would say that I am very focused on cybersecurity. And so we're really doing well with DHS and continuous diagnostics and mitigation. We've put a ton of effort and attention on implementing the tools on DHS's schedule because they provide money with that. So it's clearly attractive for us, right? And at the same time, to me, it's not just about the tools. It's also, there's something here about the organization and getting them to care about cybersecurity because they care about jeopardizing their data and compromising their customers in a way if something were to happen with their data. I think part of, I don't know if it, the word evangelizing, but I feel like I'm like a little bit of an evangelist in going and talking with the mission people and letting them understand what our situation is and let's figure out game changers. How do we, we're in a very precarious situation in the broader environment with cybersecurity. How do we change the game so that we can do our jobs and not be kind of at the mercy of hackers who are out there? So I think that's what everybody's trying to figure out. But I'm trying to do that in a way that is very inclusive and collaborative with all of the Bureau IT leaders and their mission, leadership as well, for us to find things we can do differently.
I definitely want to go more into cybersecurity, but first we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the CDM program. My guest is Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department's Chief Information Officer. Now, Sylvia, before break, we started to get into a little bit of new priorities. You said right off the bat, cybersecurity, and let me remind you, cybersecurity. When you brought up the CDM program, Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, and it just recently the IG came out with a pretty interesting report about Interior's progress with CDM. It was a little unclear about the timeline. There was some discussion about you had a deadline of 2014, and now that's been moved to 2019, but it's not clear if we're talking about apples to apples here. So help shed some light on what the IG found and what's going on with CDM from your perspective.
The IG's office was looking at what we were doing with CDM Phase 1, which, as you guys all know, it's DHS's major initiative across the whole federal government to systematically implement a bunch of capabilities and phases, right? So phase one included things like hardware, software, asset management, configuration management, vulnerability management. It includes application whitelisting, something, I know there's something we're doing with something called Forescout that gives us visibility to everything that's on the network, and also dashboarding, right? To be able to see, have visibility into what's going on in the environment in real time. So those things, DOI is like on it. We are on schedule with DHS's CDM program. I think the IG's report referenced it, and I'm just not sure if the people who wrote the report were as in tune with what DHS's plan is and what their schedule is. So the contract for phase one, at least the first contract for phase one, wasn't actually open to us until early 2015. So we couldn't have done anything before that. I think when we were talking about a September 2014 date, which they cite in the report, we were talking about that on preliminary, what DHS was talking about early on, what they thought they were going to be able to do. So we're like, okay, well, so if they're going to do that, maybe we could do September 2014. The truth is that we didn't have anything to be able to do until, like, you know, early 2015. So it really, for us, started for phase one, started for us to deploy tools and stuff in 2015. And I feel like we've done a decent job. We're not done with any of this. Phase one is not going to be done until May 2017. And then really for us to kind of have the organization absorb that, we've put more time in for it, really for us to actually get the work processes down. It's not just about cutting over and having the tool operate. It's really about how we're using the tool to manage our environment. And that's why if we cited that it goes longer than that, it's because of our really absorption of those capabilities. So phase one isn't really done until, for DHS, right? The contract technically, I think, ends end of April, May 2017. And we're on schedule with that in terms of deploying all that we have to do for phase one. Some of the things that the IG cited in their report had to do with these tools that we're deploying in that process. So the reason why I agreed with their recommendations is because we are implementing all those things through CDM phase one.
So the 2019 date that they gave, is that part of that phase one, or is that beyond phase one that you're saying by 2019, or is that part of the absorption you're talking about?
DHS's CDM program has multiple phases. DHS only just kicked off phase two, and so we don't know all the dates yet that go with phase two, and then there's phase three and potentially a phase four. The 2019 is going for what we know today, right? And I think it's mostly what we have with phase one. So in terms of like doing what we have to do in DHS's plan for us, for all the agencies, we're going to be there. We're going to do what we need to do. Again, it's the time beyond that is just like about us getting kind of operational maturity. And then I think there's multiple things going on at the same time. So as phase one is ending, CDM phase two is started. So now we have to look at the work streams that go with CDM phase two, which has to do with privilege access and access management, identity management, that kind of stuff. So it's going to be this constantly independent but also overlapping work streams across all of this as we get the full capability online in over the next several years.
Do you get a sense that the longer it takes for a program like CDM, and whether it's, you know, you're late or not, it's maybe secondary, but it makes Interior's ability to do cybersecurity more challenging? Because one complaint I've heard about the CDM program broadly is that CIOs, Chief Information Security Officers, they're ready, they're willing, they're able, they're ready to go, but it's taken so long to get going. Is that a concern of yours, that this is just not moving as fast as maybe you'd hope? And that's maybe why the IG came in and said, you guys are missing the boat in some ways?
I've been in a seat where I've been like, yeah, I want that yesterday. I want to implement that fast. The truth of the matter is, once then we get into what it actually takes to implement, if you're going to do a good implementation, you have to take time to do a good implementation. You have to have qualified people behind all this stuff, right? You can't just buy these tools and, as my CISO says, you know, have blinky lights without anybody watching them. We're analyzing and seeing, looking at the data to say, hey, you got a problem. If you got all these tools and you don't have the ability to do anything with the tools and the data, you're not any better off than when you didn't have the tool. So I've had to modify in my own anxiety to have wanted something, you know, yesterday and being impatient about it, to actually being more measured and saying, you know what, what's really more important for me is that whatever I implement rock solid so that it's working properly here and that we're deriving the benefit from it. That outweighs the fast. And I think if you do fast, you could also do bad. And then, you know, then it's like wasting the money.
Sylvia, it feels like we could talk longer. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We'll have to have you come on again sooner than 5 years. I'd like to thank my guest, Sylvia Burns, the Interior Department Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Sylvia, thanks so much for joining.
It's been a pleasure. I hope we talk again soon.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.